Welcome to Honorverse Today, the Honor Harrington podcast brought to you by TPE Network. Let's be about it.
Hello there, Honorverse fans. Welcome to our next exciting mushroom salad filled episode of Honorverse Today. This is Raul Wybera, and joined as always by my good friends Jim Arrowood and JP Harvey. How are the two of you this fine afternoon?
I'm doing great.
Same here. Looking forward to some salad.
Oh, gosh. Wow. We are out of the main series again and back into one of the prequels, and it's one of the Stephanie Harrington stories, I believe, A New Clan. This should be an interesting show. I'm sure we've all got some thoughts on this particular book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to rattle on too long. Like I said, I'm half asleep, and who knows what's going to come out of my mouth today. So I'm going to give this to you, Jim, for a summary.
Okay, fair enough. So, sex, drugs, rock and roll, and tree cats. Freshly home from an internship on Manticore, teenaged Stephanie Harrington is up to her eyebrows in trouble. There's the new tree cat adoptee who needs to be kept from becoming a risk to the carefully guarded secret of just how smart the arboreal inhabitants of Sphinx really are. There's the overeager journalist whose campaign to protect the tree cats from exploitation as the newest, coolest pet on any planet could threaten the very creatures he seeks to defend. And there's the mysterious rash of weird accidents that are plaguing Sphinx's younger inhabitants, including some of those nearest and dearest to Stephanie. In trying to get enough proof to get the understaffed authorities of her pioneer planet to act, Stephanie will be called upon to attempt things she's never imagined doing, including going undercover into the wilds of the late night club scene, a realm where her faithful guardian, Lionheart, cannot follow. Well, there it is.
Yeah. Definitely there it is. That it doesn't give a lot away, but it does kind of hint at what we're in for.
Yes.
All right. I'll throw some special notes on top of that fine intro. Back when we started the Honorverse Today podcast, A New Clan was the fourth and final book in the Star Kingdom series. As we discuss it, there is now a fifth novel following this one entitled Friends Indeed, which was published in March of 2025. For you Stephanie Harrington fans, there's already more out there. This book, A New Clan, was published in June of 2022 at 420 pages in the Kindle version and is authored by the dynamic duo of David Weber and Jane Linsgold.
Yeah.
With that, let's roll into our initial or our overall impressions. Jim.
All right. For me, I felt this was the weakest novel in the Star Kingdom collection so far. That's not to say it's a bad book at all. It is a very good book, a very good story. The story was concise, on point all the way through, and didn't wander into unknown territory and raise a whole lot of new questions. So overall, I thought it was a very good book. How about you, JP?
I read this as a coming-of-age story of sorts and an awesome young adult book. Stephanie is several years older now and taking on more responsibility as a probationary ranger. We see her youth and immaturity starting to take a back seat to the emerging adult Stephanie Harrington. It's a good story for sure, but not my favorite in the series. What unfolds in this novel is a whodunit kind of mystery revolving around a topic that's totally relevant to young adult readers. That is the lure and the problem of drug use and abuse. David and Jane did an awesome job of not just making this a simple story about illegal drugs, though. It's more complicated and gray, in that the drug in question isn't illegal, but it is still dangerous. I enjoyed how the story was told and the lessons it conveyed for sure. Raul.
In some ways, I'll probably be the stick in the mud on this one. Jim, I'm going to take over the Jim Arrowood duties today. The book is good. I'll give it that. But it is definitely the weakest of the five. And I get the plot objectives. And I really like what they were wanting, you know, the theme that they were wanting to tell, especially like, you know, the whole drug issue. But it, for me, it just, a lot of parts didn't really gel properly. There's an organic feel to the characters that's sort of the standard for the Honorverse. And in some of the cases, it just felt like it was missing. And that was especially noticeable in some of the characters that had alternative lifestyles. I remember asking David about this once, and he did note that, and apparently these were, you know, he likes to use people he knows in real life in the stories. And I think that's what from what he said, it sounded like that was what had partly happened there. But in some ways, maybe it was just modeling it too much off of real life, or it just needed more development. It just felt a little more forced than I think it needed to be. And I think that was true with the undercover mission of the nightclub. In fact, you know, in some ways, the drug theme itself was a little more difficult. It just, in some ways, it felt out of place for Sphinx, if that makes any sense. If this was all happening on Manticore, it would have had a little bit better flow. Heck, it would have felt just about right if it were on Beowulf. On the other hand, speaking of that nightclub, I really like that Zadrian character. I could care less if we ever went to the club again. In fact, I prefer not to. But my gosh, I really want to see more of Zadrian. I really like that character. On a more positive note, the core story was solid, okay? Don't think my criticism's wrong. It was a solid core story, and I enjoyed it. I really liked the new characters, Cordelia and Stone as well, being introduced. And it was more of a crime drama story than the others. Outside of those complaints, I thought it was a good story. There's other new characters I found really interesting. In addition to Cordelia and Zadrian, I really want to see more of Nosy. He was a hoot in a lot of ways. And then last but not least, first impressions, the existing characters, a lot of the development that was happening with them, it was all good. There were some parts of it that I really, really liked, and I'm going to admit it. I've already read Friends Indeed quite some time ago, in fact, but this is a good setup for that as well. Oh. So that's a lot of my first, those are my first impressions.
Yeah. Good comments. Yeah, I can see where all of those that you just said came in.
So, well, with that then, Jim, let's turn it over to you for a story discussion.
Okay. So, a tree cat known as Stone Shaper holds his companion, Goldeneye, as she dies from the effects of the Manticoran plague. She implores him to just leave her, but he refuses and stays with her until her mind glow is gone. So we move ahead 12 years.
Wait. I never made that connection. What the tree cats were calling the Gray Death.
Yeah.
The Manticoran Plague.
Yes.
Okay, and this is not the first time I've read this book. And then my brain never really made the connection how many years, that it was actually 12 years, because I just didn't do the math from tree cat years to human, to solar years.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So, yeah.
Today I learned something.
There you go. All right. So 12 years later, Lady Danette Chart Cordova is taking care of her children and two more she had adopted. Mac and Zach Kemper were left as orphans when their parents were killed by the plague. The two boys are older now, and when they reach the age of majority, will move into their parents' house and live as adults. Stone Shaper lives nearby. While he did survive the plague with his life, it had taken his ability to communicate telepathically with his fellow tree cats. He thought instead of being a burden, he would just impose an exile upon himself. He has gotten good at spying on the humans and foraging on their plants, especially the stalk plant. Yes. He detects their mind glows and observes their behavior. Mac and Zach work as loggers and finish repairing a logging robot and go looking for Cordelia Shart Cordova about what is to be done next.
Okay. Remember in some of the main series books, they've talked about tree cats losing their mind voice before.
Yeah.
So here's our real world example of that in the past.
Mm-hmm. Any comments, JP?
This is reinforcing my desire to hear more story, see more story about the plague.
Yes.
So I think it's mm-hmm. interesting. In the past, it's been clear that it had a huge impact on the humans. And here we're learning that it also had an impact on the cats.
Yep.
Hopefully there'll be a short story on this at some point.
Yeah. Or more.
That's a hit, David.
Yeah.
Or more than a short story.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Cordelia is very particular about forest conservation, and her mission is to perform surveys noting trees to be trimmed to make fire breaks before the next fire season. As she and her dog move through the forest, she comes upon a near beaver pond, one of many in the area. All the while, Stone Shaper follows her because he enjoys her mind glow. The cat becomes alarmed when she wanders into a dangerous area and he tries to warn her. Cordelia hears the cat's calls, but still stumbles into an area. She and her dog are attacked by a large number of near weasels. Despite her and the dog's efforts, they are quickly overwhelmed. Zach gets a notification on his wrist device that Cordelia has fallen and rushes to her aid. Stone Shaper also realizes that Cordelia is in grave danger, so gets into the fight trying to defend her and the dog, but he is also severely injured. Zach finally arrives on the scene and uses his shotgun to get the near weasels to leave. He then takes all three to Dr. Harrington for treatment. Stone Shaper and Cordelia bond at this time.
Okay, I have two thoughts here. First of all, I love the way this was referred to as the Stephanie Harrington method of tree cat adoption.
Yeah.
Second of all, I want that shotgun, David. I want that shotgun.
Yeah. And what particular feature attracts you to this particular weapon?
Oh, take your choice. The flechettes, the high capacity, or I guess for us, that kind of a shotgun, it'd be a standard capacity magazine that holds a whole lot of rounds, built-in select fire, you name it, I want it.
Okay. All right.
I can guess JP is chuckling along in the background there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A cool tool.
Yes, it is.
All right. So Dr. Harrington sends Cordelia to the hospital to get checked over. Cordelia has a small panic attack being separated from Stone Shaper, and Stephanie is on hand to explain it to her. After Cordelia receives extensive treatment, she is picked up by Mac, who makes a reference to the Three Musketeers for the way that Cordelia, her dog, and Stone Shaper work together to fight off the attack. Cordelia decides to call the tree cat Athos. Nosy Jones, founder of the Sphinx Oracle, comes snooping around the Harrington Clinic gathering information. He publishes an article that is full of misinformation, innuendos, and inaccurate information.
Yeah. It's like, well, first of all, I love the name. It's the perfect name.
Yeah.
for the cat. But they really make Nosy Jones seem, I mean, it's like, oh, when the first time I read it, it was like, oh, Lord, we're going to have to put up with this idiot.
Yeah.
For the whole book. And I'm sure Jane and Dave are sitting there like, aha, fooled ya.
I, at first, did not like him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
First of all, his name. Okay, here we go.
It sets us right up to not like him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But, he redeems himself as time goes on.
This is the kind of bait and switch I like.
Plot twist. Uh-huh. Okay.
Hey, for those who might be tagging along with us and have not read the book, the name Athos comes from the Three Musketeers. It was one of the Musketeers.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's explained in the book. So if you haven't read it, go read it.
Yeah, it is a fun read. All right. So everyone who has bonded with tree cats meet at Scott McDallan's home to discuss bonding and how it is important not to let too much information out that would make humans think that cats would make really cool house pets. Cordelia understands, and they form the Great Tree Cat Conspiracy.
Love it.
Yes, it's awesome. Later, Mac and Zach offer to help Cordelia with the surveys she was working on before she was injured. Stephanie and Carl learn about Glynis Bonaventure, a mycologist who is studying the mushrooms in the area, which is what a mycologist does. Meanwhile, Keen Eyes brings Flint to Stone Shaper to make a new knife. Together, along with Climbs Quickly, they decide to call Cordelia Awakening Joy. The group all gather tools and head off to work erecting a new dome. They meet Herman May, an assistant to Glynis, who seems to understand a lot about mushrooms. Frank Camaris is also on hand, and neither Cordelia nor Athos like him very much.
Does anyone? And I don't just mean in this book. I mean in the whole series. Who does anyone actually like Frank?
I don't think so.
Maybe Stan, and we'll see where that gets him.
Yeah. Yeah, Frank is not a likable person. But at this point, he's not as bad as he will become later on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He's just more... At this point, he's a little weird more than anything else. But, you know, and when you get a tree cat not liking somebody, you know you've identified your villain.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're known for being good judges of character from the very outset.
Yeah. All right. Nosy interviews Jake Simpson, a young man injured in a skimmer accident. Jake is only too happy to talk about racing skimmers and his own expertise on the subject, but he won't reveal any details about the accident itself. Chief Shelton calls Stephanie and Carl into his office. Both of them are a bit apprehensive, but he tells them he wants them to head up a new group to be known as the SFS, Explorers, a group of people who will do the same things as Stephanie did before she joined the SFS as a probationary officer. They will recruit from numerous sources, and Carl suggests that Nosy be informed to help spread the word. As Stephanie and Carl leave the chief, Anders appears and asks Stephanie if she would be willing to talk with him one-on-one. Later, over lunch, Anders explains he will be leaving Sphinx to return home and has been trying to get Jessica to go with him. But she is unwilling to leave because of her bond to Valiant, her tree cat companion. Stephanie tells Anders she will talk to Jessica. Okay, so Stephanie was very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
With Anders' proposal, and I suppose the way he put it forward, I wouldn't blame her.
Yeah, but then I think about this, and okay, yep, teenage/YA relationship angst.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, yep, it's a YA novel. You can't have one without it.
Yeah.
And instead of the standard kids coming out of high school and going to college or whatever, it's the same problem set, but presented as kids coming out of school and going into professions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But it's that young adult struggle.
Yep. And we'll see plenty of it throughout the rest of the novel, too.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Cordelia volunteers to help get the Kemper house ready for the boys to move in. She is there alone doing some light cleaning. She leaves the house open while she works, expecting Carl to come by. She hears someone in the house and is surprised when it's Frank, standing in the living room with a delivery of mushrooms. He talks to her and is being kind of creepy.
Yeah.
She calls Herman for help, and Frank disappears. Athos senses Cordelia's discomfort, but doesn't interfere. He would have had there been reason. He is relieved when Frank leaves. Carl and Stephanie arrive very soon after. The other cats are also nearby. They want Athos to accompany them to visit the Brightwater clan, but he refuses and is unable to explain why he is reluctant. And that is because of his loss of the communication.
Yeah. So. Now, when you had Frank Camara and mushrooms in the same sentence, this is where I got my first hint of, okay, this is where this story's going to go.
Yeah. Well, to me, he was just either delivering or picking up or whatever for his family's business, which is a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That would be one wild restaurant.
Yeah.
If they used that recipe.
Now, keep in mind, my wife got her master's from California Institute of the Arts, so shrooming was a big thing at the time.
No.
In a restaurant, this adds a whole new dimension to putting some extra additives into brownies.
Yeah.
What happens when it's in the mushroom soup, the gravy, the mushrooms on top of the steak?
Yeah. We had the phrase, what were the mushrooms on that Caesar salad?
Okay. Okay. So, Nosy brings an order of meds to Eldora Yazzie, another of several people recently injured in accidents. And I should add, several young people.
Yeah.
Eldora expresses her dislike of life on Sphinx. She is bored and wants to leave. Nosy gets her to talk about dancing, which lightens her mood, but she also doesn't talk about the circumstances leading up to her injury. Meanwhile, Stephanie and Jessica talk about her relationship with Anders. Jessica explains that she is not in love with him as much as he is with her. She is willing to let him go in favor of her pursuits in the medical profession and will not leave Valiant behind to follow Anders. Jessica decides it is time to split up with Anders. Nosy arrives home and he finds several thugs waiting for him. They tell him that he is asking questions about someone else's business and he needs to stop. They punctuate their demand by giving Nosy a thorough beating.
Yeah.
Okay, this is where you start to like the guy a lot.
Yep.
So, we get the mushroom. Okay, and we get more on Jessica, who, her points went up in my book a lot at this point.
And only part of it was the tree cat. She really, really wants to be a doctor.
Yes.
And she's not willing to ride someone else's coattails or get favors done for her in order to become one either. And like you said, points go up. She earns a lot of points for that.
Mm-hmm. So, at an amusement park, Dia, Carl's sister, is not where she's supposed to be. Carl keeps a cool head about it, but is determined to find her. She has left the park with a boy named Loon, who is a bit older than Dia. There are immediate concerns raised, and Carl and Stephanie head off into the woods around the park to find Dia and Loon. She finds them both unconscious, with a few injuries that are treated at the hospital. They were picnicking and drinking champagne.
Oh, boy.
Okay, now, just to give you some perspective here, Loon, I think it sounded like he was in his early 20s.
College kid with a 15-year-old girlfriend.
And Dia was 15, yes. So that would cause anybody some concern, I imagine.
At least anyone who's a parent.
Yeah, or a brother or sister. So, okay. Nosy invites Stephanie and Carl to his place for an interview to help promote the SFS Explorers. He is recovering from the beating he got from the thugs. When they get out of the reach of any possible surveillance, he reveals that he actually wants to tell them about why he was beaten. The tree cats seem comfortable with him, which reassures Stephanie and Carl he is sincere. He tells them he was beaten up because he was looking into the increasing number of accidents among young people in the area. He also admits he suspects drug use as a contributing factor and that his articles are uncomfortable for those distributing the drugs. Later, Stephanie and Carl pick up Cordelia and take her back to the camper place to meet with Herman, who is being pressured to figure out what combination of ingredients make the mushroom soup. Frank arrives on the scene, and Jessica cleverly avoids any unwanted speculation on Frank's part. Cordelia and Jessica depart, and Frank is joined by Dr. Orgeson and some thugs who try to get information from Herman. Cordelia senses feelings from Athos and checks on Frank along with Mac, Zach, and Brad. Herman explains that the discussion was about a composting project to be used in space travel to keep Frank and his cohorts from knowing what Cordelia already knows.
Yeah. Now, one thing to make clear, there was a bit of a gap between the first meeting with running into Frank with Cordelia and Jess and Jessica, and then coming back later with the Dr. Orgeson.
Yeah. They want to know how to reproduce this soup on a massive scale.
Yeah. Was it a soup or a stir fry or some sort of dish?
Some sort of food dish, yeah.
Yeah. But whatever Herman put in it was a certain combination he didn't even know.
Yeah. Because it wasn't any one particular mushroom, it was the combination and then the heating process.
Yeah, and we never actually do find out what the particular thing was that caused this.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay. Okay. Stephanie, Carl, and Cordelia meet at Eric Flint's to discuss Herman's situation and figure out a way to get some legal videos of activities at Herman's place. They make it to their goal to secure and have a sample of Herman's mushroom dish analyzed, and they make Stephanie promise not to try to take individual action. Stephanie meets with Nosy again to discuss the effects of Baka Bakari and the increasing problems it is causing. They suspect that a network is setting up for distribution in a big way that could even be more harmful.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Baka, I like how Bakari. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I like how they named it. Yeah. And basically that they pulled the bluff to get Herman to talk.
Yeah. So we have the Baka Bakari now, and this is what the combination or the dish that Herman came up with is now called for the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm. And am I the only one who kept trying to call it Baka Bakari?
I didn't try to call it that.
I don't recall that, but I know that.
We were still doing the Babylon 5 podcast the first time I read the book, I believe.
Oh, I see. Okay. While heading toward the Harrington homestead, Carl gets an alarm from his air car that he is flying near an accident. When he lands to investigate, he finds an air car crashed with Stan dead and Trudy with heavy injuries. Trudy tells him that Stan just flew into the trees and wrecked the vehicle. Trudy is taken to the hospital and has her wounds treated. She is expected to recover fully, but is facing extensive rehabilitation. When she regains consciousness in the hospital, Jessica tells her that Stan didn't make it. Trudy is crushed. She further admits that Stan was taking drugs, and she also admits she had been imbibing before joining the Wild and Free Conservation Group. So apparently she was drinking. Chief Shelton later tells Stephanie and Carl that the tox screens showed no results of drug use. The chief also contacts Police Chief Chuchkova, and she is also concerned with the increase in accidents. Stephanie and Carl are given permission to look deeper into the matter, as it is believed that Frank was Stan's supplier of Baka Bakari. Carl later tells Herman about Stan's death, and Herman swears he is not going to make any more Baka Bakari. Carl explains that he must continue or Orgeson will simply find someone else to do it. Herman promises to tell Chief Shelton everything and gives Carl a sample for analysis.
I thought this was maybe one of the most important parts of the book for a bunch of reasons, but primarily that we watch, without it being a lecture, we watch a really cool discussion emerge about rights and technical law, and then the next layer out, which is doing the right thing, even if it's not illegal, because the initial discussion about making the mushroom soup, the stew, the stir fry was, well, it's not illegal, and what people do, you know, in the privacy of their own home, was one of those kind of discussions. And then as the dialogue emerges and the explanation is given that it could be causing accidents, even if it's not illegal, because it's being used by, I'll use the word kind of sloppily, right? Immature people who may be inclined to abuse it, even if it's not illegal. And then this accident happens and Stan dies and it hits Herman hard. And he goes from wanting to take the stand that, well, I'm not going to stop what I'm doing because there's nothing wrong with it, to realizing that while there's nothing legally wrong with it, there is a dangerous first potential consequence and then an actual consequence. And it kind of, another sloppy use of a term, it kind of sobers him up. And he realizes that this is a bigger deal than just this philosophical thing about what, you know, what people are allowed or not allowed to do. You know, with a young adult audience in mind who would be reading this, it's a really cool lesson.
I agree
completely.
Okay, so the Tree Cat Conspiracy meets and is joined by Anders. After discussing the latest developments, they make a plan to investigate some clubs in Yawada. They decide to start with a club that is catered by Frank's family business. Stephanie's mother is concerned that Stephanie will be used as bait in a sting operation, but grudgingly gives her permission with Carl's assurance that he will not let anything bad happen to her. Okay.
This is getting to the point where I had some criticisms earlier.
Okay. And, you know, that's kind of bold of Carl to assure somebody that something is not going to happen. Yeah. That's a little presumptuous and a little scary, you know. All right. In a Yawada.
It's starting to get a little out of character for the people involved, too.
Okay. Yeah. All right. In a Yawada hotel room, the Tree Cat Conspiracy gathers complete with Tree Cats to get ready to go to the Enigmatic Riddle nightclub, where Stephanie will be disguised and will mingle. She will be accompanied by Anders. Stephanie undergoes a complete makeover with Jessica and Cordelia's help, calling herself Stevie Bits.
Where did they get that name? I want to know, David and Jane, where did they get that name?
You know where they got it.
All right, so they go to the club. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. Okay. While there
was a song.
Yeah.
About drug use.
Edge of 17, I'm thinking here.
Sung by a lady named Stevie Nicks.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I'm not singing, though. I'm just humming.
Yeah. Okay, now where was I? I'm lost.
They go to the club, you said.
Yes. While there, Stephanie and Anders mingle in the crowd, and Anders immediately secures a dance partner. Frank and one of his associates, Rodrigo, are also there. A person named Zadrian notices that Stephanie looks a little out of place. Zadrian sees his unofficial job in the club as a kind of a hostess who helps everyone fit in and have a nice time. Stephanie leaves a non-alcoholic drink at her table and dances with Zadrian. Stephanie has a great time as Zadrian teaches her how to dance. When she returns to the table, there is a fresh drink waiting for her. After dancing with Zadrian, she is warm and takes a drink from her glass. Stephanie then begins acting like she is looking for something and becomes uncharacteristically hostile and even threatens a bartender. Back in the room, Lionheart senses that Stephanie is in trouble, and all the tree cats go to the club and create a huge ruckus. Medics arrive on the scene to check on Stephanie, who is okay other than being a little out of it. And when she awakens, she explained to the others that she was fine until she started sipping her fresh drink. Then she started feeling weird. A little later, Zadrian explains that the fresh drink Stephanie found at her table had been ordered and paid for by Frank and Rodrigo. Yes.
Uh-oh.
There was also evidence that they had distracted the server and probably slipped something into her drink. While this is all supposition, there is nothing to prove their assumptions. The operation is done. Zadrian promises not to give up looking for solid evidence.
This is where Zadrian becomes a really cool character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I had so much fun trying to picture Stephanie as a goth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's kind of the way the description came out.
I like, too, how 21 Jump Street this was, right? You've got an undercover cop selected to do this because she really looks young.
Yeah.
And that's the target audience that they're worried about with this drug. So,
but she really is young, though.
Yes. But looks, you know, my impression is looks even younger than she is. So not the person you might think as a law enforcement officer, probationary or not. And in she goes and, you know, becomes a lucrative target, maybe.
Yeah.
Somebody got her, but everything is speculation up to this point.
Yep. So everyone gathers to talk with Herman. He tells them that after Cordelia left, Orgeson laid out an ultimatum to him. He was given 3 days to make up his mind if he would leave Sphinx and work for her producing Baka Bakari. If he gave her the wrong answer or didn't give her an answer, he would be severely beaten or worse. The group thinks that if they can catch Orgeson performing a kidnapping of Herman, they might get enough to have her and her drug ring prosecuted with a felony. The Tree Cat Conspiracy assures Herman they will protect him. Okay, here we go again.
Herman worked with Stephanie. Oh, wait, no, it didn't.
Yeah, right. Herman calls Orgeson and turns down her offer. The conspiracy make their plans, but are not sure when Orgeson will make her move on Herman. 8 days pass, and Carl, who has been watching Orgeson, reports that she and her people have checked out of their hotel, so she will probably be making her move very soon. Everyone takes their places. Orgeson arrives in an air van and 3 thugs in tow. She is playing it pretty cool and trying to look unthreatening. She has even brought muffins and tea. They sit down and dole out the refreshments. Herman takes a sip of his tea and immediately passes out. The thugs begin to take Herman to the van when the conspiracy emerges and confronts Orgeson, who claims they are simply going to transport Herman to get checked out by a doctor. Athos detects Cordelia's panicked mind glow, and he and the rest of the cats go into action, subduing one of the thugs. Carl gets the drop on the others. Two SFS officers who were nearby arrive and take Orgeson and their people into custody as Carl explains the charges against them.
So they finally get a sting operation that actually works.
Yeah. They weren't tripping over each other.
Yeah. Literally. Well, literally and late 60s era versions.
Yes.
Of tripping.
All right. To finish off this, the Harringtons cater a huge party in honor of Stephanie's 16th birthday, along with other things to celebrate. Orgeson's arrest and upcoming prosecution for numerous charges is discussed, as well as Frank's arrest for spiking Stephanie's drink, thanks to the video evidence found by Zadrian. Word about Baka Bakari is spreading and people are being warned about its effects. Trudy is also on hand, walking on crutches, and promises to give Stephanie a run for her money at the next hang gliding session. The Tree Cats also gather and have hopes that Athos will return for a visit to the Brightwater clan as he moves forward and puts the past where it belongs. And a good time is had by all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A non-mushroom-fueled good time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the whole nature of the party was, stopping by feel to it. It was just kind of funny.
Yeah.
Because Stephanie is so, keep it simple.
Yeah.
Anyone else see a young Honor Harrington in this? There's no doubt that Honor descended from this group of Harringtons.
Even though she's such a different character and mm-hmm. such oh, a different yeah. personality. Yep. But yes, there's definitely.
Yeah. So, yeah, I really liked here. Well, I'll get into that later, I suppose. So, Raul, there it is. I'm going to turn it over to you for discussion of characters.
You know, your description was so thorough that there's not... The solicitor is going to get filtered down even from what the... It wasn't a three-page character list like some of the bigger, thousand-page honor novels. But you were so thorough, parts of it are going to still get thinned down a bit. I am going to start off with Stephanie and Carl, plus cats. It's starting to really look like everyone knows that the two are totally into each other. Except the two of them.
Yeah.
And of course, if you remember, we already know from other works that at some point in the future, they do end up being a couple is their ultimate destiny at some point in the future. So it's less a question of do they get together, it's how do they get together. Any thoughts on the two?
Not really.
We've already talked about Cordelia. We've got Dana and Nat, Danette. The Cordova family, I think, are worth mentioning. I did like that new group being introduced.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just had a cat curl up in my arms wanting to get a nap.
Ah. Cordelia is an awesome character. I really like her.
Yes. I really do. Yeah. I really do. Mac and Zach, I thought, were both interesting characters. I like them both.
They're hardworking. And and I would trust them, and they're gonna do just fine on their own.
Yes, Anders Whitaker is fading out of the story.
Yeah, and regrets, not really a surprise. He's following a path that has sort of been laid out for a while, and what we suspected or knew is happening.
Mm-hmm. Frank and Stan, who've been around since the beginning. What to say about those two? Well, not much left to say about Stan.
Poor Stan.
Yeah.
Right. Frank, on the other hand, if we're done with him, I'm not going to complain. Not because he's a poorly written character, just because he's so damn unlikable.
Well, that, and I think he was more of a tool for Orgeson. I did not feel like Frank was an evil, inherently evil person. He didn't seem to have the brains to do that.
No, but he was a willing tool.
Yeah, he needed a handler to point him in the direction. So a weapon, a tool, yeah.
Trudy Franchetti, and I'm sure we'll be talking, well, when we get to plot points, I know we'll be talking about Trudy, just from one of my plot points.
Yeah.
But Trudy Franchetti.
Yeah, she's got the most growth.
Yeah.
Over the book series, and she is actually likable.
Yeah, she's gone from that cheerleader that no one likes to you can't help but like her now.
Yes, and it was very relieving to me that she didn't die in that incident with Stan.
Yep. Jose Nosy Jones. I know we've talked about him in and out throughout, so
yeah.
But here's the probably my favorite new character in this subseries.
Yeah.
Herman May, our unwitting what's the word I'm looking for? Our unwitting tool in some ways, I guess.
Yeah. He was a good guy. Mm-hmm. Who discovered something quite by accident and
didn't handle it quite right.
Yeah. Well, it got out of control in a way that was unintended.
Yeah.
And then people did swoop in and try and make him a tool, but at that point he was not willing to play that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's an honorable person because he said on numerous occasions that his job was to be there for Glynnis and assist her and aid her.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
Yep. And speaking of which, Glynnis Bonaventure.
Scientist, kind of, she wasn't a major character in this?
No. The reason I'm including her here, even though she was basically almost a non-character, did anyone actually suspect that she might be the person some of this at first?
Not at all. I never thought she was the bad guy.
Zadrian. We still don't know if, at least they came up with a better name than Pat for you Saturday Night fans.
Right. Yeah. Cool character.
Yes. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
I really want to see more of Zadrian.
Yeah, I hope so.
And our latest, the latecomer in this whole thing would be Lyric Organson.
Ah.
Our bad guy, our villain who comes out of nowhere.
Yeah. Bad lady.
Yep.
Ruthless. Absolutely. And she has one thing she wants, and she's not going to take no for an answer.
Yeah. And she doesn't have very much in the way of limits.
Yeah, apparently not.
And I want to close it off with Athos.
How many different names did this tree cat have throughout this
and that's
story?
It actually became a little difficult to keep track of, to be honest.
I will address that later.
Okay. Keep in mind, though, that tree cat names do change over time and circumstances. So, plus, there was Athos's names for himself and other people's names for Athos, not just human name for Athos, but tree cat names for Athos.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the only place to bring up for me, really, that wasn't enough in the discussion already would be the enigmatic riddle. And this was my biggest complaint is this really didn't feel like Sphinx. It really seemed out of place for Sphinx. And I get it. And you had to have a place like this to tell this kind of a story.
Yeah.
But it felt more like a slice of Beowulf transplanted.
Well, and it could very well be, which, I mean, what was that girl's problem? The one that Nosy interviewed, she was bored.
Yeah.
You know, they need places like this for young people to go to and get together.
Maybe with a little less drugs involved.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there would be less drugs involved. Oh, there will be, since we've gotten rid of the drug ring.
Yeah, though at this point, Baka Bakari still is not illegal at this stage. I'm sure that's going to change over time, but...
Oh, yeah, well, I'm sure. I'm not sure what the how they would go about doing that, but I'm sure that it will be, since it is causing a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Did I miss anything as far as locations or places? Did I miss anything as far as characters that you wanted, or you or JP, that either of you wanted to bring up?
I'm good.
Yeah, nothing from me.
Well, then I'm going to give it to you, JP, to talk about themes.
Okay, I have four of them, and then obviously throw in if you guys have any others. First one is friendship. Generically, we're watching this group of kids. Watching them mature and watching their friendships with each other evolve and mature. But it's a cool story about friendship here. Young adulthood, maturity, and responsibility as a theme inside not just this book, but the ones inside of this story arc. Responsibility given to Stephanie as a ranger. Responsibility for both the intended and the unintended consequences of making and selling Baka Bakari. Trudy's growth and maturity as a character, maybe that would be the most significant in this theme. Maybe not. I don't know. To me, it stood out as an especially important thing to watch her go, like you said, Raul, from being the cheerleader nobody likes and trying to force popularity on herself to really becoming a really cool young adult.
Mm-hmm.
Drug use and abuse. We were just talking about this, right? Baka Bakari's not illegal or not illegal yet, but legal drugs can also be abused. Addictions can form. Alcohol maybe is the best example. It's not illegal, but that doesn't mean that there aren't real problems that revolve around the use of that legal drug. So interesting to see on this young world how they deal with things like this that are emerging. Well, what do we do with it now? And we don't know what the answer is. That story isn't written or isn't read yet, but Baka Bakari is the type for probably a much bigger set of problems. And it's neat how they explored, they being David and Jane, how they explored that here. And the fourth one, the still new state and uncertainty associated with the tree cat human bond, and maybe the best represented in this story with Cordelia bonding at a point when she had to be separated from her cat and Stephanie having to roll in and explain why she was having anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of this is so new that all this learning is happening, but the cool thing about the Honorverse is we've also seen well into the future with Honor and her relationship to her cat, that we get that kind of as forward-looking backstory to watch how that we ultimately get to a place like Honor. Honor's relationship with her cat are a thing. Yep. I mean, this is all crazy new. Stephanie's only been bonded with a cat for a handful of years, right? And now we've got multiple bondings, and it's just cool chaos in a way. Those were the themes I pulled out of this story. Were there any other ones?
I think you've got the ones that I was thinking of.
Well, with that being the themes, Raul, I'm going to hand off to you.
All right. So we're going to go into our favorite plot points. And Jim, I'm going to go ahead and start with you.
Okay.
Get it over.
Sure. My favorite plot points involve the growth of Trudy and Jessica. In Trudy's case, she has turned around from being a snob to a young woman with a purpose in life and a sense of humor. I really, really enjoyed that she found something that allowed her to be involved with conservation. Okay, it's just too bad she didn't see that her relationship with Stan wasn't the best choice for her, and he almost got her killed. She might see it in retrospect, but for now, she is too deep in grief to just move on from that. Jessica is a young woman with a direction that seems to be well established, and she isn't going to let a relationship with Anders get in the way. She also realizes that her bond with Valiant will not allow her to leave Sphinx, so she's not going to stumble over it a lot. I admire her drive and her pragmatic approach to relationships.
Yeah. Good points.
Yeah.
Good points.
How about you, JP?
I'm with you on Trudy's redemption. No surprise, since I've mentioned it a few times. We saw it coming to some extent, and Raoul warned us a while back to wait and hear the rest of her story. And it seems the rest of that story unfolded here. Maybe there's more, but wow, what a tragic and also not tragic story in this character. Love her. Happy that she didn't just go away as a character being somebody that was really not likable.
And let me just add here quickly that I like she has not lost her competitive side, as she lets Stephanie know, I'm coming to get you. So
on hang gliding season. Yeah.
But this time it wasn't malevolent. It was in friendship.
Yeah. And I mean, we saw the transformation start in fire season. So I'm glad it wasn't a wasted lesson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this does open it up for me to go ahead with mine, because you know what? Favorite plot point for me absolutely was Trudy's story. And actually, it's one of my favorite parts of this novel, and indeed one of the parts of the this particular prequel series that I really like is the way Trudy really develops and grows as a character. There's a lot of life lessons in her, and I kind of feel sorry for her, because she's the one who has to learn everything the hard way, it seems. Or whether she has to or not, she gets stuck learning everything the hard way.
Yeah.
And with, you know, it's funny, my notes kind of matches with what JP said. I was always sure there was more to her than we'd been seeing. And now we know.
Mm-hmm.
I also liked how the whole subject of drugs and addiction was handled as a theme. It's not an easy subject, and I thought it was handled in a very good, graceful, and hopefully effective. I'm in my 60s, so I don't know what's going to be so well as what's going to be effective on the young adult or youth genres, but it was handled in a very good way, I thought.
Yeah.
And that earns a lot of forgiveness for me based on the fact that some of the storyline itself seemed out of character for Sphinx. So that earns a whole lot of forgiveness for me in that respect.
Okay.
And Jim, I'm going to pass it over to you for quotes.
Okay. I'll go ahead and kick this one off. So Herman explains how he invented the Baka Bakari and says that Frank is coming by for another batch. Jessica doesn't want Frank to get suspicious about them knowing about it, or that they are watching them, so she has to think on her feet. Frank, Jessica said, giving the burly young man a playful swat, still rushing from place to place. I never would have expected to see you here. Frank managed to regain his cool with a swiftness that would have done credit to the maitre d' of his father's most expensive restaurant. Hey, Jess, what brings you here at such an early hour? Hanging with Cordelia, she said. Cordelia's brothers asked her to drop off a few things they'd fixed. I came along because I heard how amazing this place was. I think these buildings are so cute, don't you? Yeah, they're all right, Frank said. Kind of weird, really. Carl's SFS cruiser lingered in hover, just below the tree line, while Stephanie watched the conversation on its directional camera. Now she melted in relief as Jessica swatted Frank. Jess is going to get them out of here. She's always cool-headed. Even the short time she's been working at the hospital has added to that. I think we can relax.
Yeah, that was a cute quote.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Shows you how dense Frank is, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah. All right, JP, over to you.
All right, for me, the SFS Rangers are setting up the actual investigation tied to the apparent accidents associated with Baka Bakari. Stephanie is given a participating role with limitations. The circumstances are serious, but there's a hilarious acknowledgement of one of Stephanie's character traits, or perhaps a character flaw, depends on your view, as Chief Shelton lays down the rules. Stephanie beamed, and Shelton raised a cautioning index finger. I'm confident that what I'm about to say will do only limited good, probationary Ranger Harrington. But I'm going to say it anyway, and you're going to listen. He smiled, but his tone was very serious. You are only investigating whether or not there actually is some new drug out there. You are not confronting anyone you think may be making or distributing it. In fact, you're not taking any action except to research our database without specifically clearing it with Carl ahead of time. And in your case, Mrs. Chart Cordova, as of now, I have no reason to believe that you partake of Stephanie's impulsiveness. Keep it that way. Yes, sir, Stephanie murmured dutifully, and Cordelia nodded. Shelton glowered at his probationary ranger for another moment, then sighed. Sir, am I authorized to go beyond research? Carl asked. I mean, if I develop a lead or another avenue of evidence opens up, can I follow it up? Interview people I think may know something that could help us. Look for physical evidence in the field. Of course you can. And may I enlist some of those unpaid volunteers in the process? Stephanie held her breath as Shelton frowned in thought. All right, he said finally. I know perfectly well that Stephanie is constitutionally incapable of not poking her nose where it doesn't belong if she thinks it's the right thing to do. I'll probably regret saying this, but that's actually a fairly good trait to have. But because I know that if I order you to shut her out, she'll just go off and begin nose poking on her own. So yes, you are authorized to enlist your volunteers in field work under the following conditions. First, you must be in charge and have supervisory authority. Stephanie, he looked at her sternly. If you try to do one of your end runs around Carl, I will revoke your probationary ranger status permanently. Do you understand me? Stephanie nodded silently, her eyes huge. When I read that, I literally laughed. It's like she is constitutionally incapable.
Yeah, she's impulsive, all right.
And we do that. The last part of that line, her eyes huge, is that eyes huge in fear, or is that eyes huge Puss in Boots from Shrek 2?
Right.
I'm sorry. I don't know why that thought occurs to me when I see that, when I read that line, but it is what it is.
You can imagine young Stephanie making that kind of a cute face.
Yeah.
I would never break those rules. No.
No, never. No. Okay, Raul, your quotes.
All right. The bad news is I've got four of them. The good news is they're very short. The first actually was about a fourth of the way in. They're talking about some of the gravity issues and setting up the kids program. Sphinx's equivalent of scouting. Because of some of these heavy gravity accidents. This particular one, this has got to be a Davidism. Those of you who follow David on Facebook knows he's a guru of puns. So Stephanie comments, which would let us educate about some of the hazards of living on a high gravity planet, Stephanie cut in, without being, dare I say, heavy-handed. Her pun scored the groans it deserved. I'm sorry, that was hard to miss.
Dare I say, heavy-handed?
Yes, exactly. The other quote is just a one-liner that is just strikes me as it fits talking about the Harrington clan. What can I say? This is Anders trying to get some alone time with Stephanie that Jim had talked about early in the plot points. And Anders says, I'll buy you lunch or whatever, Anders replied promptly. He then made a visible effort to relax. I remember how regular feedings are a key to a happy Harrington. And that just did, not just from this, but Jim, like you said, Honor and Stephanie are obviously related.
Oh, yes.
Thank you, Myrdal Mod.
Yep. This one's a little longer than a one-liner. But it also fits something I had mentioned a little earlier, particularly regarding Stephanie and Carl. They are talking about the investigation, and this is Carl, Cordelia, and Stephanie together making their plans. Stephanie caught her looking and shrugged. I just thought we'd have a better case if we compiled more data first, that's all. Getting more data without telling the authority figures in your life, even when you had enough to go on, Carl said, sounding grim, is what led you to crashing in a thunderstorm and nearly getting eaten by a hexapuma. Yeah, you were 11 then, but you're nearly 16 now. There's a time to stop being the smartest kid in all the classes and try to start being a part of the team. I agreed we need to bring in Chief Sheldon, Stephanie said. You win! Brother and sister, or newly married, Cordelia thought, ruefully as she followed the pair into the SFS headquarters. I wonder if even they know how they feel. And like I said, that fit what I was saying earlier. It's like everyone knows these two are in love with each other except them.
Yeah.
Old married couple.
Yep. And in this last one, I'm going back to the one-liners again. This one line kind of summed up Stephanie's birthday party for me. She's talking to Anders, who seems to be about to ride off into the sunset. I never knew, Stephanie said to Anders, that there could be so many ways of saying this isn't a birthday present. The number one excuse is that this gift isn't for me. It's to help with the new SFS Explorers program. Number two is that it's not a present. It's just something to eat or drink that they brought for the party. Number three is that this is for Lionheart. So, yeah. I liked it. I thought that was a just nice little bit of icing on the cake as it comes out to the end. So those are my quotes.
All right.
Jim, to you, sir.
Okay. All right. As I said at the outset, this is a good, solid story, but not my favorite in the Star Kingdom series. There was some great character growth, and I was especially happy about Trudy's development as a character. I think I said at the beginning of the series that I hoped she would be more than just an irritating antagonist to Stephanie. There were a few things that made me cringe a little. Keeping all the tree cat names straight was a little tedious in those sections that featured them. I'm not completely sure, but it seems like sometimes there were multiple names for the same character. Then there were the names the cats had for the human companions, just too much to keep track of for me. There was a little too much greasy kid stuff between the characters and their romantic interests, but I suppose that's to be expected in a young adult book featuring upper-aged teens. There are numerous times the reader is reminded that Stephanie is just a probationary ranger. This was a little off-putting, and at one point I said out loud, "Yeah, I get that." Then after all the reminders, 15-year-old Stephanie is trotted out to be the bait in a potentially dangerous situation. Mm-hmm. There was also a point in the story where Chief Shelton calls Stephanie and Carl young idiots. I found that quite unprofessional. Even if he was joking, it isn't something a supervisor should say when on the job. So, and my takeaway is when you see strange behavior in someone you've known for a long time, don't take it for granted. It may be an indication of a deeper problem. All right, over to you, JP.
Yeah. Okay, two things. First, this book shows us there's a period of time when a healthy child starts to become an adult, and it doesn't happen overnight. Instead, we see some pictures of what young adults look like, primarily through Stephanie, but also through Trudy, two very different characters with very different backgrounds, but both apparently moving through young adulthood with real promise for success. Second, most people think of drug abuse as something that happens with illegal drugs, and I hinted at this before. This story did a great job of showing how a substance or a drug that isn't illegal can be just as dangerous, especially in the hands of an immature person, regardless of their age. And I'm not looking past the fact that Stephanie is very mature for her age, but that doesn't mean she's mature. She is a 15-year-old pushing into 16. Mm-hmm. A part of wisdom is experience, right? And she's not got the experience of anybody that's older than 15. So that limits her. Takeaway, if I have a takeaway, young adulthood should be an exciting time, but it can also be a scary and even dangerous time as kids start to see the world through maturing eyes. A great lesson not only for the young adult reader, but perhaps for the parents of kids entering young adulthood. And I'll just say for the record, that's me. In spite of my advanced age, I have an 18-year-old son who has just turned 18 not too long ago. So my wife and I have gone through watching him wrestle with not taking mushrooms and things, but that transition, that mental transition from being a kid and then being a young adult to being an adult. Mm-hmm. This whole series is probably a great way to approach these kinds of topics within a family if these books are read by the kids and adults together. Just a thought.
Yeah, that's a good thought, JP.
Yeah. And then going back to your comment about legal drugs, if you recall your history of Coca-Cola.
Right?
Yep.
Yes.
Yes. Dr. Pemberton created that as a feel-good medication.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Not just a soft drink.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So, Raul, what you got?
Okay. Well, it's not the best in the series. That shouldn't suggest that this is not a good book. It's just, the other books have set such a high bar. It's still a fun read. I will certainly be reading this again if and when I reread the prequel series. There was a bit more relationship angst, but that's pretty much to be expected in a young adult book, especially a young adult book with a female lead. There's going to be a lot of relationship drama.
Thought I said that.
So did I.
I concur.
I concur. What Jim said. However, also, like I said earlier, if you've read the main series, especially some of the shorts and stuff, you have an idea how this has to end. I kind of hope it won't get drawn out too much longer. I don't know. It's okay. We've seen both of them. Okay. We're at the point where it's, okay, let's let Steph and let's let the two of them become a couple already. The mushroom plot for me, it was a little bit predictable. But then again, like I said, my wife did do her master's degree at CalArt in the 1990s. So that was the thing on campus at the time. Not that she was eating funny salads, but the others. Basic takeaway is the book, like I've said earlier, the book takes on the very difficult theme of drug use and abuse, legal and illegal, in a way that I think really has a chance of reaching younger people with a solid message. And I really hope it has a good influence from that perspective. It's a good message, and it's a well-delivered message.
I'm just glad you weren't going to tell us that your wife was actually a secret member of Ken Kesey's Merry Pranksters. That probably nobody listening to this understands what I just said, but maybe. But
Feel free to explain.
Look up Mr. Kesey and the Merry Pranksters, and you'll find a lot of information about a period in U.S. history when folks were experimenting with these sorts of things. Ah.
All right. So from here, gentlemen, let's have some ratings.
All right. I rated this 4 cans of cream of mushroom soup.
I'm going to give it 4 exciting mushrooms with no nutritional value.
My rating on this one is going to be 3.5 planes of whiter shade of pale.
Cool song.
If anyone has watched The Tenth Kingdom, you get this joke. If you haven't watched
It was in the
midpoint in the mushroom forest.
Yes.
And if you haven't seen Whiter Shade of Pale, go ahead and give it 3.5 plays of Stevie Nicks' The Edge of 17.
Which definitely seems to apply to this story.
Yeah.
Both definitely seem to apply, yeah. But yeah, I can't recommend 10th Kingdom high enough. It really is. I think it's probably my best Larkat work.
Okay.
So, Jim, back to you, sir.
Yeah, overall, that gives us a rating of 3.8 out of 5. Goodreads reports 4.3 with 994 ratings, and Amazon a 4.5 with 1,454 ratings. And that's where we come in with this book. We're a little bit under the average, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, Raul, do we have any feedback and shout-outs we need to look at?
We actually do. Some of it includes questions for David. I'm going to go ahead and present them here. And if I get when I get answers from him, I will definitely carry them along. The first was from the Field of Dishonor. Someone was asking, do we know if Field of Dishonor will get one of the new trade paperback editions? The releases went from book 3 to book 5. And I'm not familiar with this, unfortunately, since I have mine currently on Kindle. And I believe my Field of Dishonor, was that? No, that was right. Mine's one of the original from the 1990s, in fact, a little tattered. So, David, folks are wanting to know about Field of Dishonor. Next, so Wall Name Liability asks us about House of Lies and House of Shadows. So I was listening to Honorverse Today's latest interview with the man himself. Sadly, it seems with everything that's going on with the series, House of Lies and House of Shadows probably will not be made. Hopefully the novellas that were to be attached will be, though. The wiki claims there were supposed to be the foundations of the Duquesne Plan and the Mason Alignment, respectively. However, per David, the Haven focus story is supposed to start with Thomas Tiseman and Lester Louisville's Midi Cruise under Alfredo Yu. After that, it progresses through the scenes from there and Giscard's shared history. It's revealed that the latter two are telling these stories to Prichard to convince her to trust Tom after his coup. The story ends with her meeting Tom. Initially, he's sitting in St. Just's old chair, but he gets up and offers it to her. The other story is supposed to be about the foundation of the Salarian League, starting with the Beowulf-led relief forces of the Final War. So the question again is mostly to Dave, will we be seeing these novellas sometime in the future? And I have to agree with Well-Named Liability. I would love to see those in one of the anthologies. Question for us, podcast gripes / questions from Sir Herodin. I am slowly going through the most recent episode to End in Fire, and there are two points that are bugging me, and I am starting to wonder if I am just reading too much into things. One, everyone seems pretty certain that the Leonard Detweiler dream of the current djinn is actually not what was originally intended, and yet I can't help but wonder why we seem to be taking people's words for it, when they are part of a secret society and party to a campaign of covert operations and misinformation? Fair question. I can answer that for me, and I'll let Jim and JP give their own answers. So, Sir Herodin, for me, it's like you're getting a consistent message from very diverse groups of people. When you hear the same message from different sources, and they are unconnected or unrelated sources, for me, that gives it more reason for credibility. That's the big part of it. And the way the Onion seems to work and the way they've used misdirection in the past, it really kind of fits for me. So I just didn't question from that perspective. Jim or JP, any thoughts?
I'll throw in right along with you. That was just fine.
Just one little add to that, which is interesting because we've never talked about this among the three of us, why we seem to be taking a certain position, this one or other ones. In this case, I think it just happens that we're all looking at it the same way. My little add is that for me, a part of this is where I perceive myself as the reader of the story relative to the story. Sometimes we're on a ride with the character, and other times we're seeing things that are not necessarily known by a character in a particular moment. And across time, I've landed where I've landed. Whether that's true for the three of us or not, we've all kind of landed in that same place, which is what he's observing. So, not having given it any thought until now, that I also agree with what you said, Raoul, but I'll add that it's where I see myself as the reader, not just as a participating character in the book.
Yep. And that said, David's perfectly capable of throwing a really nasty plot twist on us. It's not like he hasn't done it before.
Yeah.
And the second one, Sir Hadrian Harridan said there were two. Is Audrey O'Hanrahan an idiot? She knows the Alliance is looking for a secret group of genetically engineered people, and knowing that she herself is part of a group of such people doesn't come forward to the Alliance and assumes it must be a different group. Like, how many secret societies of genetically engineered people does she think there is? And if nothing else, maybe compare notes?
Yeah.
Audrey, it's a fair point. Audrey, in some ways, is going through an existential crisis, I think, though.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The curtain has been pulled away, and we see the actual wizard instead of the big roaring green flame. And even there, you notice how careful she is. She's had enough interaction with Honor to know, to at least trust the fact that, okay, here's someone maybe I can trust. And of course, she was almost killed. I don't think it's so much of an idiot as it is, in spite of all the genetic engineering, she's still human.
Yeah.
Thoughts, gentlemen?
Yeah, sounds.
I'm with you.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. I actually have a couple from Frank. No, I'm sorry, from Conrad, rather. First one was on the interview, which we didn't get a chance to talk about. Hi, Raoul. What a great interview, though I'm not sure how to feel about tree cats playing keyboards in a band. Hey.
I'm not sure the tree cats know how to feel about it either.
I am very pleased to have a much fuller answer to my question than many, many episodes ago about the continuation of the Honorverse after Dave stops writing. David talking about Dayhack and a Magna anime adaptation, again, was great to hear. I'll be on the lookout for them. And yeah, that's got me wanting to reread the Dayhack series.
Yeah, and that information, that's for David to tell. And so he shared that.
Yes.
That's not for us to talk about.
Yep. And that was just an absolute honor that he is willing to share the way he is. Only one more Manticore Ascendant book? No!
Yeah.
In my best James Earl Jones' voice. As for Honorverse games, why does the mobile app that was put out years ago get overlooked? I thought it was pretty good. I think the reason it gets overlooked is because no one knows about it, or hardly no one knows about it. I do have the Saganami Island Tactical Simulator game from Ad Astra, though I've not played it yet. Hope you're all doing well and take care.
Nice.
I'd like to know what happened, why they ended the... You can still find copies of Saganami Island. It's not cheap, though.
Talking about the game.
Yes, the game.
Yeah.
And he also writes to us about Honorverse 38. Hi, Raoul. Guess what? I just realized I haven't read this book. As you may recall, I'm not big on the Crown of Slaves portion of the Honorverse. Now I have something to read. Take care, Conrad.
Sweet.
Yep. This is what I'm saying. It's a core book of the series. It's not a spinoff book. Without this book, you are missing, in a lot of ways, the end of the honor story.
Conrad, let us know what you think when you read it.
Yes, absolutely. That's right, JP. I'm having trouble getting to the stuff on Facebook at the moment, so I don't have anything. I know there was, from Rhonda. Love the interview. Comment from David about made me cry ugly was familiar. I had the story in March, and my response to him was similar. And like I said, I'm pretty sure we'll get one more on that. Facebook Honor Day, Honorverse Today page is falling behind. This, I think, was a note to you, Jim.
Yeah, probably.
She was going to point out Hole in the Wall is a, quote, famous outlaw hideout in Wyoming. Butch and Sundance, Jesse James, and others. Yeah, we missed mentioning that.
Cool.
In the historical context. And that now, I think, gets us more or less up to date on a lot of the feedback.
Okay. I have one more.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, JP.
So I have one more that Hank forwarded from the contact form at TPE. And this came in from Marty Wolf, looks like Wolfo Gamer. Marty says, in your podcast for A Call to Arms, you were wondering what book series you should look at next. Well, I have a lengthy one for you. The 1632 Ring of Fire series originated by Eric Flint and now includes just about every author from Ban. There are enough books in that series to keep you going for years to come. Thank you, Marty. We are, in fact, actively talking about what's next. Now's not the time to walk everybody through that, but absolutely appreciate the input to the discussion. You just won't know how we digest that because we're doing that outside the podcast. But there will be something to follow this, and your offer is definitely a part of the consideration. So thank you much, Marty.
Yep, thanks. And finally, a big shout out to Mr. Hank Davis of the TPE Network of fun yet informative podcasts. Go to the tpenetwork.com page and check out all the great content and watch for more to come. You won't be disappointed.
Not at all.
Yeah. And on our next very exciting episode of The Honorverse Today, we will discuss another anthology in the Worlds of Honor series. This is the seventh in the series entitled What Price Victory? And it includes stories from Timothy Zahn, Thomas Pope, Jane Linscold, Jan Kotuch, and Joel Presby. And there will also be a novella titled First Victory by David Weber. Join us for fun discussion and commentary.
This will be a fun read, I think.
Yes, it will. I like the short stories. So, with that, we'll just sign off. Say goodnight, JP.
Good night, JP.
Good night, everybody.
So long.
Thank you for listening to Honorverse Today. We welcome your feedback. Email us at honorverse@tpenetwork.com. We are a proud part of TPE Network. Visit us on the web at honorverse.net, on social media, or tpenetwork.com. You can subscribe to Honorverse Today by visiting tpenetwork.com/subscribe. Visit TPE Network for the very best in podcasting. Opinions expressed in the show are solely those of the hosts. They do not reflect the opinions or views of Bain Books, the authors, or TPE Network. Visit Bain.com for the best in science fiction. Many of their books are available from the Bain Free Library found at their site. Theme music is Honor and Sword by Zakhar Valaha. Check his website found in the show notes for all your podcasting music needs.
This is going to be an interesting show. I just had to remind myself we're not doing Babylon 5. We're doing David Weber.
Right, right.
This is not good. This does not bode well.
Okay. Hit it. He also admits he suspects drug use as a contributing factor and that his articles are uncomfortable for those distributing the drugs. Later, Stephanie and Carl pick up Cordelia and show her who is being pressured. What the hell is that?
I have no idea.
How Herman... Okay. Later, Stephanie and Carl pick up Cordelia and show her how Herman is being pressured to figure out what combination of ingredients make... What the frack?
I think that is what it was supposed to be. I think. Hang on.
Yeah, they're pressuring him for the ingredients and the recipe. Herman.
Herman is being... Thank you, because I wouldn't let me type over the top of it. Okay, recording done.
Nice. That won't even be close to 2 hours long after you take out all the profanity.
Pardon my profanity.